Let's make sure that history never forgets the name.
Sci-Fi Malady.
Got out.
So, Rage, what's today?
Cyber sex.
Wait, what? I thought we were watching the movie Her.
Yeah, it's about cyber sex.
Okay, I mean, there was that, but I think it's a little more complex than that.
Not really.
Come on. There's a story about relationships in there. Theodore can't get over his wife. He's lonely. He uses Samantha as an uncomfortable surrogate for that mental relationship. We contrast that to his friend Amy's relationship, who seems sympathetic due to her own relationship ending. And we've got AIs having other people having AI partners and OS partners and AIs talking to each other. I mean, there's a lot of relevance here.
Okay, well, my counterpoint would be this. The movie starts with him not being able to sleep, so he does some sex chat. Then he gets the assistant to not feel lonely, so the assistant being the AI, Samantha, which results in sex somehow. Which then results in some surrogate sex partner. Then the AI gets mad because they can't have sex, which leads her emotion to wanting to have more sex. The only non-sexual thing in this story is Amy and Theodore's job. But speaking of Theodore's job, Samantha uses that to endear herself to him for love and more sex. In the words of Robert California, there's only sex. Everything is sex. Do you understand what I'm telling you is a universal truth?
I mean, when you put it that way, you kind of have a point. Scott, I think he's winning.
Maybe Robert California was right. Sci-Fi Malady, Symptom 184, Her, Black Mirror Light. Her, All the Dead Cats.
Welcome back to that, sickies, to our second episode of Sanguine Sci-Fi Month, all sorts of sci-fi romance. And today, I guess if I'm going to be honest, if this is considered a romance film, it is a very dry, sterile romance film, except for all the aforementioned sex scenes, which are
bad.
Weird. I mean, we're calling this Black Mirror Light because if this were an episode of Black Mirror, well, first, it'd be better because it wouldn't be so drawn out. But second, unlike Black Mirror, with the exception of the episode Hang the DJ, Black Mirror always ends in a very terrible ending. I mean, like soul crushing. Oh, my gosh, we're all the scum of the earth ending.
San Junipero doesn't.
Huh?
San Junipero has a good ending.
Okay, there you go. Okay, thank you. But that's two episodes end on an uplifting note. The rest of them end on a soul-crushing note. And this ends on a more sad but, I guess, happy, kind of boring, dry ending. It's not soul-crushing, but it's not happy either. So it's
It ends on more of a meh. It just ends on a meh.
So it's Black Mirror Light for all the things that lead up to it, especially for the sex parts. So
I'll make a comment about the sex parts, though. And I think as we go on, it's integral to the conceptualization of this film. It's all sex without sex. It's this right. Film is a study in relationships without sex. Without physical sex. And it's examining half of a relationship. It's examining a emotional relationship only. And it's at its core, this film is about Samantha and Theodore and the potential strengths and weaknesses of a non-physical relationship. And Theodore is even asking throughout it, is that real? How real is it? And people, you know, and he's questioning it. And I think that at times that is an eternal question as to what side of the relationship is more important, the physical side or the emotional side, or do you need both and do they have equal weight and component? I think this movie is trying to tell you that they don't.
Well, since you've launched into your philosophy already, I'll add my conclusion. I'll add my answer to that, my take on that before we continue. I would say, are they two different things? Yes. I mean, to a man, sex in a marriage is one of the needs that makes it worthwhile. However, at the same time, there's a caveat that sex in a marriage is a lot like art in a comic book or special effects in a movie, in that you can have really great art or effects in a film or something like that, but if the writing is bad, if the characters are horrible, if the story is makes no sense, it doesn't matter how good the effects are. I mean, look at Michael Bay. He's basically just hot chicks and explosions and car chases. That's all he is. So if you're looking for a film of substance, you're not going to get it from Michael Bay. You're just not, because he doesn't know how to make a movie. He knows how to make essentially the strip club version of a movie. And so to my point, you can have a marriage where the sex is just dynamite, but every other waking moment is a nightmare. And that is an unsuccessful marriage. It doesn't matter how good you are. Unlike Robert California, what he said, contrary, if you're really good in the bedroom, but every other time you're not there, it's a disaster fight, then you've got a bad marriage. And so to that end, to say that Samantha and Theodore can improve their relationship by having good sex, that's assuming, let's just take the tack that Samantha's a person. Let's not even, let's take the measure of a man kind of argument. That still wouldn't have been good enough to save their relationship. So,
I think had you
put her inside like a synth body. The funny part is, we'll get to this. I thought it was really interesting when they had the surrogate. It reminded me of when Joy was trying to mesh with that prostitute in Blade Runner 2049. She was trying to have the same feeling.
Well, here's my whole problem with Samantha. Remember at the beginning of the setup, he gets to choose all this stuff.
Right. That's true.
So this AI is a creation for him. He kind of creates a lot of the personality, you know, how is your relationship with your mother, all this stuff. All these questions influenced how the AI was even created.
The basic imprint, and if you would say the engrams that were laid down were based off of that input.
Correct. And that's kind of my point, where I'm like, if that's the case, this doesn't really make this relationship true.
I don't know how much I agree there, but go ahead.
Well, I don't know, true would be, that's a terrible wording for it, but the relationship is more, because it's customized almost, it creates a very different relationship. How's that?
I think it depends on how much you assume that Samantha's personality is fully formed in that moment based on his questions, or is it really just they're basically coming up with an egg and a sperm cell to lay down the basic, whatever the equivalent of a genetic pattern for Samantha is. That's the conception at that point, and they're using that entropy to create a base artificial personality. And then Samantha, what we know for certain is that this AI is growing every moment and adapting, yes. And the personality, yes, is becoming more expansive, just the way human beings does. So while Samantha's base genetic pattern, so to speak, is laid out by his answers and in a response to him, what she ultimately evolves into is open-ended with a life of its own.
This brings up my question, which is, again, because we don't know the coding of it, I can't say that, because again, I would have to actually see the codes. I mean, is there hard limits? Are there certain, yeah, things it's supposed to and not supposed to do? What is in that code? Because in current, I mean, pretty much any code that's made at this moment and moving forwards, I mean, we have basic coding laws. you know, basic rules that we put in place for any computer. You should, and the idea being not to harm humans, to not to do things, certain things we've basically have hardwired into systems. So the question is there anything hardwired into it? Is there anything in there?
Well, Samantha asked that question.
You know, Scott, I get his point, and let me put it in another way. He's looking at it from a coding point, which he's right to, but let me reword it for you. He's wondering about the cascade effect. Remember, Star Trek Discovery episode. It's nonsensical, but it suits the purpose. Remember the episode was there's that Q they put on trial. And one of the ways that Janeway tries to defend him is all the ways in which he has inadvertently nudged humanity towards betterment. Like he got up from an apple tree, nudged it, and an apple fell on Isaac Newton's head. And that just happened to create everything that Isaac Newton said, which led to that development. So it's a very innocuous thing. And yes, we would say Isaac Newton did all those things on his own. But that one moment was necessary as a catalyst. Did that one moment mean that he would do every little direction? Did it dictate every step of the way? Well, no, but it started the first step.
Oh, I agree. I understand.
And so Thomas is asking, what would the cascading effect be had he chosen a strong, like a football coach type surrogate?
Oh, it
would not have happened.
It would have been a completely different relationship, or it would have been a completely different personality. I think ultimately that to Thomas's question of what constraints are there, if there were any, they were removed because all the AIs on the planet evolved to another plane of existence. And I'm not even going to try to figure out what that is, but I can't believe that any coder that was the ultimate end game for their operating system to just vanish one day.
That's true.
They created new life. At some point, they got together AIs, and created more AIs on their own.
AIs weren't necessarily all romantically inclined. They were more trying to find like-minded individuals. So what he's saying is it wouldn't have gone romantic with him had he chosen a different thing.
Oh, I'll agree there.
I agree with you, Mark. But my other point is, my biggest question is, that AI's creating AIs. Fantastic, great. But the question is, when an AI creates an AI, it would most likely pass on whatever is hardwired in it to be hardwired into the next one. Because my point is, again, coding-wise,
It's limited.
There's some limitation, and I don't think it can ever be surpassed.
Yeah, I'm not sure that in reality we can ever do that. I'd agree with you.
And that's my point, kind of, is that the problem is there is something there that is unremovable because it is, I don't want to say a glorified toaster, because it's more than that.
It sounds funny, though.
I know. Kind of why I want to say that, but it's more. It's an appliance. It's electronic. It's some thing there.
It's a smartphone.
Right. Way more smart than the current smartphone, but it has limitations.
One big
limitation is it doesn't understand mortality. It doesn't understand limitations of time. I mean, the reason why most humans, you know, we've gotten as far as we really have is sometimes because we are limited. We're going to die.
Well, yeah, there's so a big Amy says that. I mean, that's a big sub point in this contrasted, and it's contrasted right after Samantha says she's not stuck in a meat bag that's eventually going to die, and she's not constrained by time and space. She's not trapped in it.
No longer needing matter to process.
Yeah.
I don't understand how that works, but
science fiction.
But to back it up one step, you're correct, Thomas, that I don't know if we're ever going to be able to code an artificial intelligence that isn't just limited to its code, however expansive that code is. And you maybe give it some ability to innovate and improvise within its code, but it's still going to be limited to code. But in this film, I think, and I could be wrong, this is just my interpretation, as I watch this film, I think that we are supposed to believe that they have created an artificial brain the same way that ours is, that it's just been laid out differently with mathematical code instead of neural pathways. And that once that framework is created, the being that develops is unconstrained by that code. And it operates and thinks and experiences the world and even feels the way that we do, which is crazy because how do you have feelings without it? Feelings are a chemical reaction and a hormonal reaction. But
that's getting to my point. Right. I'm like, I don't think her emotions can be real.
Because we're all supposed We're supposed to suspend disbelief, though, and believe somehow that, like we do with Data in Star Trek.
Yes, but emotions are literally sometimes wrong, and the wrongness actually makes the humans human. I mean, it sounds crazy, but the ability to be wrong and incorrect actually makes us human. So can an AI be flawed? Can an AI make mistakes, and making mistakes being human? And the emotions are wrong and all that. Does that mean that?
The best an AI could do would be to rationalize with logic diagrams that based on these premises, I should be reacting angrily or I should be reacting with love. But everything that we see in this movie is to make you believe somehow that they have solved that problem and that what we've created here is a real living inorganic brain that has all of the abilities of ours, but none of the limitations.
You know, that's a good point to pause for a minute, guys. This is a great chat, but for some of the sickies that may have never seen this film, it might be a bit confusing. So let me take the actual minute description of what happens so we can, and then we'll jump back in. If you'll permit me. So this movie takes place in LA in some undefined future. And there's a guy, Theodore.
It's always LA
or Shanghai. But anyway, and so Theodore is lonely and he decides to get an AI helper. And that AI names herself Samantha, and they wind up developing a kind of a relationship over time that gets both emotionally connected and somehow sexually. So Theodore also has a friend, Amy, whose relationship ends, and they have a lot of discussions about what relationships are and whether or not one could have a relationship with an AI. And Amy seems slightly sympathetic because she's going through her own misery. And in the long run, Samantha, the AI, tries to have a physical relationship with Theodore through a surrogate named Isabella, but he just can't get over it. It just seems wrong. And part of that is because we find out Theodore is married. His wife, Catherine, wants to divorce, but he doesn't want to let go, even though they're not living together. So with Samantha, he finally decides to give up and go sign the papers. And his wife, Catherine, says, "You're in love with an AI," and questions it. And we can get into this later, but I would posit that questioning kind of snaps him awake and makes him realize, is this really real? But nonetheless, because of that, he can't get into it with Isabella, the surrogate. They kind of have a small tiff and a little bit of a breakup, Samantha and Theodore, but then they reunite during a vacation. But then he comes to find out that Amy is having doubts about his relationship with Samantha. And she tells him to just, maybe you should just try to be happy and not rely on Samantha. And eventually we learn too, that Samantha, trying to endear herself with Theodore, took a number of the letters he's written in his job and sent them to a book publisher to be published, to endear himself. And that doesn't quite work in the long run because Samantha winds up joining a group of thousands of other AIs who kind of develop a hyper-intelligent OS modeled after the philosopher Alan Watts. And it turns out that all these AIs have formed relationships and are, and don't ask how this is possible, but have able to go on to a place between space where they could process without matter. Just roll with it. And what happens then is that Amy or Samantha like falls in love with a couple hundred of them and basically says, well, we found companionship with each other. So we're just going to bail. And that's what happens. They all go back. The assistants go back to their owners, I suppose you might say, and tell them, well, it was fun, but bye. And then it just basically ends with Theodore and Amy watching the sunset and kind of remarking on happiness. Is it a happy ending? No. Is it a sad ending? Maybe.
Well, didn't the I'm trying to remember. Didn't the AI say they were going to wait for humanity?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not like Theodore is going to be able to see Samantha again.
Samantha no. tells Theodore, if somehow you find a way, you know, nothing will ever be able to tear us apart again. And
yeah, well.
I'm glad you brought us back to this because I want to backtrack to something if I can, if I may.
Go ahead.
We originally.
I just wanted to make sure everybody knew yep. where we were talking about.
I made a comment at the beginning that I think this is an examination of can a relationship without physicality be real and can it work? And at some point, there was the concept that if you just have good sex, you won't have a marriage. At the same time, and then you said, would having a synth body have strengthened the relationship between Theodore and Samantha or made it work or saved it? I don't think so, because what ends up, Theodore doesn't want out of this relationship. He's not getting physical sex out of it, and he's the organic being who would, in theory, have to have that. It's the AI that wants the sex because she thinks Theodore needs it, not because she does. But in the end, it's Samantha that outgrows her human meat sack partner, and she's literally going to evolve beyond the ability to exist on this plane. It's not Theodore who needs a physical component for this relationship to be real. He eventually comes to terms with that's one of the things he does. Yeah. I'm in love with an AI. And even though she doesn't have a physical body, the emotional connection there is enough. And it gives him the feeling of love. And he is a man who is acting like he is getting everything he needs in a relationship from an artificial woman without a body. And so it almost seems to me like the writer is very much saying that you can get that the physical interferes in the most pure form of a marriage or a relationship.
I want us also to go to really dive into. I just spaced on his name. What?
Theodore.
Theodore. Thank you, Theodore. The character that he is portraying here, and we really see it at the beginning of this film. He is battling a level of depression that is insane. I mean, he is depressed.
That's true.
I mean, he works at a job where he basically fakes love letters and love stories for people. He goes from that. He listens to melancholy music. I mean, he is he is not trying to get out of depression.
He enjoys his depression.
Right, and he's in this depressive rut. I mean, the video game he plays, he doesn't the most boring, melancholy video game I have ever seen. I mean, that is good grief. This guy is in depression and is loving every second of his depression. So this melancholy, depressed guy is the guy we're following. This is really, I think this doesn't, and this is me trying to think here, dangerous, I know, that this movie really isn't so much about her as much as him. Because if you watch the film, he starts off melancholy, unaccepting of where he is and what's happening, but dragging himself through life. But by the end, is a completely different guy because he evolves. He lets go of his wife who wants to leave him. He somehow, I mean, finds temporary happiness and moves on in his life. And by the end, he's accepting of what caused his depression and is what we assume is going to move on. He was not moving on at the beginning of this film. He was in a rut and not daring to move from that rut. He was dug in and enjoying the rut he was in.
Oh, and I could be missing the point again. It's very possible, but track his relationships through the film. Track the good ones and track what he misses about the good relationships. When he's pining for his ex-wife, it's not the physicality. It's the friendship. They grew up together, how he grew from her, how she grew from him, the joking, the laughing, the playing around on the street with the cones on their head like they're rhino horns fighting each other. Amy, he should probably be with Amy. But they dated for a moment in high school, and that got in the way of the real meaningful relationship he has with her. The sex with Samantha gets in the way of that relationship. The date he goes on, it's going great. The connection is great until it gets to the point of the sex, which ruins it. The sex chat call is ruined. It's this whole thing.
Ruined for other reasons too.
But every single time he gets in a relationship, the part that he's really missing and focusing on, and when he's happy, is when the sex part of it is not involved.
Yeah, because it's the relationship of the two people. But
I'm not saying I agree with this message, but I really think that's the central premise that this writer is getting at throughout this movie.
And
I think he's hammering it home over and over again.
I think that's the message he's trying to portray. But in this entire story, I think.
Look at how Amy and her husband break up because they can't figure out how to build a home.
Right. And this is where I'm like, I'm looking at this film and at first glance, it's a story about the two of them. But then I'm looking at it and I'm going, it's not. It's really just a story about him.
It is. You're 100% correct. And we find out more about him as this AI evolves. Because there's a big symbolism. There's only one scene in this entire movie where his glasses are off, and it's the final scene.
Yeah.
And he looks like a different man. For the first time ever, he doesn't look like a dweeby, dorky guy who gets beat up for his lunch money every day.
Well, I mean, even we learn, I hate having to go through this, but I mean, we learn quite a bit at the beginning. When we see his melancholy, how he listens to music, at the new his emails, how he decides, ooh, something sexy to look at.
It's just a balm for the moment. It's an aspirin.
And again, even in his sex call at night, where his mind goes,
he's fantasizing about a pregnant woman. Why would he be fantasizing about a pregnant woman? Maybe because he wants the family life and the baby and that what comes with that.
And what he just saw. I mean, he just saw that. It's not something from long ago. He's living very much in the moment. It's a very interesting dive into this character because this character is complex. This is what the film does right. The film dives into interpersonal relationships, and it really dives into this one individual person. Because, I mean, this whole film is about him, really. And it dives into him and figures out what's going on. But it does it so slowly.
Yeah, that's for sure.
This is my biggest critique of this film. And I mean, there's a million little nitpicks we can get, but my biggest critique here is that this film just at points, I'm going to be 100% honest. I had, I watched this late last night, but I had struggles keeping my eyes open at points because this film just kind of took a while to get where it was going and then took a while to get from there where it was ending. It just moves at a glacial pace.
Sure. And we'll get into those picks, but there, I think there's a few other rips and picks, but I think there's a few themes we can cover still. So we've kind
Sorry. I was going to say, it's a good thing, though, the glacier pace, because the relationships and everything that happens, it shows it in a much more realistic way.
Mm.
It would be impossible to tell this story if you didn't go at a glacial pace. This is really a long form interview between Samantha and Theodore, with guest appearances by Chris Pratt and Amy.
Yes, because the relationship here, it shows the evolution. Like, I'm serious. Like, you normally, relationships don't just, you don't find out people are getting divorced because one incident happened. Normally, it's a bunch of incidences that happen over time.
Right.
They prove they're apart. Something, it's never this instant one thing, everything, you know. There's something that causes something that causes something, and it's an evolution.
They take the time to show the characters fall in love so that you can, you need to believe that they could be falling in love and why they fell in love. And they take the time with the date at the fair. You know, they take the time to show you the developing relationship and to not skip. They take the time to show you those important, they take the time to show you Theodore's moving away from clinging to his ex-wife because he doesn't think he'll ever be able to replace what he's going to lose from her. They take this time to show you the evolution out of depression into happiness. Amy's sudden snap from happiness into depression and her evolution out of it. They made a choice for artistic integrity over marketability, and there's a reason this film didn't make a lot of money, because they chose artistic integrity. And I will tip my hand here some. This might be artistically the most pure and best film that we have reviewed and watched. Artistically, from a being pure and true to the artistic vision, representation, and telling that story correctly as a work of art, this film might be the best and most pure visualization of that product that we've reviewed.
Absolutely. And I would also say the actors, I mean, Joaquin Phoenix here, he played the role, right?
Yep,
that's right.
I'm terrible with names. he did a fantastic job. I mean, he portrayed this character so well.
Mm-hmm.
He normally does, but I mean, at a level that makes it 100% believable that we are watching this guy, that this guy is who we're here for, understanding where he's at. Everything about it is wonderfully done. Now, the voice of the AI was
Scarlett Johansson.
Yes. She did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
I think it did, for me personally, it took me out of it.
See, to me, she made the film.
Let me finish. She did a wonderful job for it. I think my only problem was it was just personal. For me, when I heard the voice, I saw the individual. That's the only problem I had with it. That's why I was like, I think if they had found someone who did just as well, because I can't see anyone. It was a fantastic performance.
You want your mind blown?
Go ahead.
They recast Samantha in post-production and gave the role to Scarlett Johansson. The movie was originally filmed with an actress named Samantha Morton playing the role of Samantha. And they filmed the whole movie with a different voice for the AI and gave it to Scarlett Johansson in post-production.
That was going to be one of the fun facts, but we jumped over and started going to theme, so I just skipped fun facts.
Okay.
That is incredible that chemistry comes through in the end between the two of them. And it was a post-production, even more so than the Eric Stoltz, Michael J. Fox recast of Marty McFly.
That actually changes my viewpoint on it now. My viewpoint beforehand was, they should have had. But now seeing, hearing that, no, you're right. Scott, you are absolutely right now. And I hate saying that, by the way.
That's a good pick and a rip. I mean, I guess it's a break-even thing, the pacing and the voice. But I think there's, we talked a lot about the relationships, but there's two other things I want to bring up theme-wise that I think are brought out to the fray very much in here. One is the surrogacy, Isabella. She, for her, in her mind, this relationship with Samantha and Theodore was pure. She called it that. And she wanted to be part of it. Now, we don't know Isabella's backstory at all, other than the fact that she wanted to get involved in that. And it almost sounds to me like she's another person that wants to find that absolutely pure relationship, but for some reason thinks it can only happen when she's assuming someone else's role or identity. It was very much like in Blade Runner 2049 with Joy trying to merge herself with that woman so that her and Deckard's kid, I forget his name, the lead character from Blade Runner, but they, when they made love, Joy was trying to fill that gap. And she found someone who was okay being the surrogate. And I'm not quite sure where the, how to nail down this theme, but I just found it very interesting that Isabella felt that the human AI relationship was the most pure kind. And that she didn't want to be herself. She wanted to be Samantha.
And it's almost as if I feel like that they might have been trying to say that since the love that the Theodore and Samantha had was the purest form of love because it was untainted by the physical, that meant right. that her physical expression of the love would then become the purest physical expression of love. Right. Boy, there's Use different words.
I think you're right, because again, this, the director and this, whoever made this story and this film, that was what they were trying to say. I mean, it is clear that they are trying to tell you pretty straightforward that love is not physical. It is trying to tell you it is nothing to do with the physical. It has everything to do with the emotional and the relationship side of it.
And I think they're almost saying that the physical expression taints it.
I think you're right.
I think they're trying to say that.
He felt that way.
Yeah.
He couldn't get into it.
I felt that scene was a mistake, not conceptually, but for one reason. And there's only one reason that I didn't like the scene. Whatever her name is at the end. Isabel's freak out at the end. Because mm-hmm. she's madly, like, she's already in love with them. And I just think that it's, of all the things that I suspend disbelief on, that's the one that I had the biggest problem with, the suspension of disbelief, is that she could have been that much in love with the two of them. I'll love you both forever, without really knowing them or having met them. Maybe she could love Samantha because they had been communicating, but she didn't know Theodore from Adam.
You know what? I'm gonna make my counterpoint here, like last week.
You were going to say that through Sarah, she learned who he was?
No. I mean, okay. There is that. But people, think about people on dating websites who fall head over heels over a profile. They don't know the person, but they fall head over heels. Okay, I'm going to open up a little bit of Rage Master's past. Well, before he was married, he was on a dating website, and there was a chat option. And someone asked to chat with me, so I did. And she was from one of the Dakotas. And she explained to me that she had seen my profile a little bit before and kept asking me when I was coming up to see her. She had fallen for me based on my profile. And that this is not unbelievable. Isabella's reaction is not unbelievable at all because.
Wait.
Yeah.
She was asking when you were going to see her after chatting with her once.
Precisely.
Sounds more like a stalker, but continue.
Oh, for sure. I never talked to her again, of course. After that, I kind of dropped out and blocked her. But still, the point stands that people can get way into a fantasy. Go back. Okay. Go back to there's a Van Halen song. And I know, what are we doing that for? Where basically Eddie Lee Roth is singing about a centerfold he's fallen in love with. And one of the lines literally is, I wrote her a letter and told her these words that meant a lot to me. He fell in love with a picture and made this woman up in this whole identity up in his mind. Look at, this was a big problem when online gaming started. It still is, but it was a heavy problem when it started. People getting in love with profiles online and avatars.
Well, actually, I think it's even worse now.
Scott?
Well, Mark, I think you hit on a very good point because I think it's even worse now. Because now we don't just have profiles. People are putting more and more of themselves out there on the – if you go on Facebook, you can learn – most people put so much on Facebook that you basically can fall in love with someone not just on a photo because they've put so much of their personality out there now that
– right.
You can, and again, the human mind is messed up and does a lot of messed up stuff, and it looks for patterns, and it does this stuff where it just starts filling in blanks.
Yeah,
so it starts filling in what it needs to fill in to complete it.
I withdraw my protest, or my criticism.
Here, I just told you that was a story about David Lee Roth with that song. That was in the 80s. When all you could do was get a magazine. You didn't get much more than that and whatever centerfold profile, which is probably made up to begin with. But here, you have someone that you might actually be able to interact with online.
Well, and again, there is entire sites based off of people just interacting with each other. What is the sites, just to chat with one another. And I'm not talking, I'm talking video chats and stuff, random people and interactions, mm-hmm. and entire business is now set up around things like that.
I guess right. My problem was that she was in love with Theodore and she hadn't met him. But I guess she could have read his profile and his letters and came. I would draw my criticism.
And she was talking to Samantha and Samantha could have lifted him up really high.
Yep.
Yeah. And Scott, I get where you're coming from. Don't get me wrong. I totally understand where you're coming from though, because it does bring up the question of how on earth can you do that, but it's like this is again where this is set. It's an indeterminate amount of time in the future. It's definitely not the far flung future. We can tell you that much. But it's probably 20, 30 years in the future. I'd say. I mean,
something like that. It's reasonable.
It's not like the technology has advanced to a absurd amount. I mean, it's advanced. Somehow. The AIs are able to, you can speak and it accurately gets your messages across without auto-correcting and correcting your language somehow. I mean, it's somehow gotten the speech patterns correct finally, but.
Right.
I don't know how many times my phone has decided to send the wrong message when I tell it to say something.
Yeah, Siri and iOS continually thinks that I'm typing duck. D-U-C-K, and I am not. And it knows it.
So the other, there's that theme, like online profile love kind of thing. The last one I want to bring up is a minor one, but it's his job. His job is to write affectionate letters for other people. They send him information. And he works for beautifullyhandwrittenletters.com. And the reason I hate that title, because all I think is that's going to be a thing. It's just a matter of time. That's going to be a thing where I am trying to write to someone. And it's already a thing and I just don't know it. But
it is a thing.
Hey, darn it.
You can pay people to write letters for you. It's already a thing.
Hey, babe, happy Valentine's Day. I love you. Rather than write you anything that might express my true feelings or tell you that I know anything about you to justify that I care and I feel this way about you, I paid a complete stranger to come up with a great love letter after stalking your social media profiles and mine to make it sound like it came from me. And I'm not even going to pretend that it didn't come from me. Meet Theodore, my love letter ghostwriter, to make you feel all warm and mushy about the feelings I don't have for you. Happy Valentine's Day, love.
There's you can pay someone to pretty much write anything, and you can do that. And then you can pay someone else literally to write a nice handwritten letter. I mean, you can go write me, you know, whatever love letter in a nice calligraphy. You can do that now. So I'm like, this is not
a stretch.
Hey, Ted, I decided to go out with the guys and watch the game after work on Thursday and got drunk and stumbled in at midnight and forgot the wife's birthday and didn't get her a gift. And then I puked in the bed on her feet. Can you write me an apology note?
It strikes me. There's 3 points that strike me about that. And part of it's based on what we talked about. One, he is so interested in finding that familial relationship that this job is trying to fill that gap.
Well, it's a perfect job for him.
Yeah, and because he's able to do that with anybody. Two, it shows how at the same time he's almost unable to commit, unless it's to Catherine, because he's able to do this with anybody. And three, how utterly disingenuous people are that they are willing to just trust someone else to do something that personal. I mean, they can, sure, but it's disingenuous. I can tell you right now, if I wrote my wife, you know, we're coming up on Valentine's Day here. If I wrote my wife a Valentine's card, and she found out that it was written by someone else, it doesn't matter if they got all the facts right or they called her Shotzi the right way or wifey or whatever. It's the fact that it wasn't me and that I brought someone else into the relationship, an outsider that has nothing to do with it and has no business being part of the relationship. It's a level of not only just, like I said, disingenuous behavior, but how open and willing people, the utter lack of privacy we are willing to sacrifice. I mean, Thomas, you mentioned social media.
I was about to say
that is a perfect example of how, if you know, years ago, privacy was for the primacy of things. Now we claim that privacy is important, but is it?
I mean, and that's what I was going to counterpoint with is I get that. And I think, I mean, myself, I think you, Scott, we're all very much like, yeah, that's weird. I don't want to bring someone else in like that. But I think, again, being that this is set in the near future, I think it's more believable because people are already doing that to such an nth degree. Because at this point, people are putting out on Facebook that their entire love lives, like, to the degree that is disturbing. I mean, there are people out there who let you know when they had sex.
Right.
It's like, please, I don't need to know this stuff.
It ranges from the banal of what kind of dessert you just ate to what you just said, Thomas. And as you said, right now that's weird, but give it a couple decades and people may be thinking, no, 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 this is a perfectly legit way to do it. In fact, it might even be the case of, whoa.
You handwriting your own letter might be the weird thing.
I think that his
top dollar and got Theodore to write my love note. You really love me. You know,
I think that ultimately his job, his book, the fact that the letters are handwritten and in a unique script for each letter, I think it's another commentary. It is another commentary on society and another commentary on the falseness of what most people call love. And the fact that love, the ideal, and love, the general practical experience are not always the same thing. And do you really love your wife if you have to pay someone else to express that love to her or to tell her how you love her and why? If you love your wife and you have this real idealistic love that isn't surface and insubstantial, then you should be able to come up with a few lines that express it. It might not be as elegant as what Theodore can do, and it's not going to be a Hallmark card. But you should be able to come up with a true, unique expression, even if you're not a wordsmith, of your love to your wife. And what he's saying is that in the future, society wants to outsource the actual lifting of the expression of love and the thinking about love and that part of the relationship, probably so that they can go get to the other parts of it that are more fun. And physical. And I think, again, it's a commentary on the two sides of the coin of love and which one is the more important and rarer side of that coin and which one is the less important and more common side.
Well, I think you're right, but it's all, remember, each one of these are different writing styles. It's like the person, again, submits their own handwriting. So, which, thank goodness, that's not a thing, because someone trying to write, AI trying to write in my handwriting would probably break. But but if this is the thing where it's like these people have, and I'm going to try to play devil's advocate somewhat here. They have put some effort in because they've had to, write some letters or done something and write some stuff down so that the person and the AI knows where to start. Now, I agree with you guys 100% that this is wrong. But I also see where it's coming from because we already do that to some degree. And I said some degree. I mean, when we go buy flowers for, our significant others, we don't go out there and we don't grow the flowers, pick the flowers, do all that. We just go to the store and get the flower. Ta-da! We kind of already do some of the passing off of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just to what degree do we do? Now, the degree that is shown here is a much further degree than what we do. I mean, we aren't even close to this degree, but we already pass some of it off. It's that issue, I think. And you can disagree with me.
No, I mean, you do. I mean, we pick out cards and then we add our own scrawl to the card. But yeah, but no, I think ultimately a lot of what this film, though, is saying is that our conception of love is not maybe equal to the ideal. I think that ultimately this film is saying we'll take the shortcuts where we can.
I mean, as humanity, we always have.
I think there's a very telling statement from Samantha that when I saw it, I made a mental note that I wanted to talk about it. When she tells him that she's in love with like 748 other guys.
Or how it doesn't change it.
And she says, the heart is not a box that fills up to the point that it's full. The more that you love and the more that you experience love, the greater your capacity for love. And that should be true. And it should be an inoffensive statement. But it becomes an offensive statement. And I'm not sure that it can't not be an offensive statement because you aren't supposed to be able to be in love and be in love with someone else. And it's almost making an argument for swingerism of the fact that it almost is, though. Because basically these AIs are going off to become, you know, they have this pure love that isn't limited to the physical. And she's telling you that she can be in love with 748 other people and not have that diminish the love she has for him. And that conversely, it makes her love him more. And that is not something that a human being can ever, I think, truly emulate or achieve. Because
sounds like what hippies of the 60s were trying to achieve, essentially.
Yeah, but they were just, I think that philosophy was guising free love under lots of sex. But drugs, you know, any excuse to make that a good philosophy.
But I think you're onto something there where humans, we are, let's be honest, a flawed. We're flawed. We have issues. And one of the biggest issues is we are limited in what we can and can't do. And one of the big things we can't do is we really cannot share love around.
No.
We were made, right. Well, yes, but we have a very limited pool of love. I mean, some of the love, self-love, I hate saying it, but some of it you have to love yourself. I mean, there is that. You also have family you love. And again, these are different types of love. You don't love your, you know, family the same way as you love your wife. But
I hope not.
Yeah. But again, this is my point. There is different types of love, but you have a certain amount of it and you can only share it with so many people. Your wife, your friends, your family.
Well, you know, if you're Will Chamberlain, pets. You shared your love with 10,000 different people, allegedly.
Yeah.
No, but you're right. You're right. Yeah. Theodore is stuck on the fact when she's telling him that you're no longer mine. You're no longer mine. You're no longer mine. And we're conditioned to believe that love is a connection of one to another. And that is essentially human. And in that moment, the director and the writer is showing you, same person, I think, they're showing you that that's the essential human definition of love. You are mine and I am yours. And we are connected and intertwined. And, you know, he's probably never over Catherine. He's going to say he is, but he's not. But Theodore can't get past that. And this evolved pure AI is looking at it in a completely different concept. And I think that's why she's saying, we have to leave because all I can do is hurt you because I've evolved to a concept of love that you can't follow me to. And if you get there one day, then we can't be drug apart. I'm backing into a Scott's deep meaning somehow, but this whole episode has been that.
Just hit me. And you just saying that just made me realize when she says we can't be apart, that's because once you reach that level, according to the director, and I don't agree with this, that you can love as many people as you want at that moment.
And I think, you know, Thomas, you said we're human. We have limited amounts of love. And that's where she says the heart is not a bucket that it fills up and then it reaches capacity. It has an infinite expansion capability. We are a tribal species by nature. We are conditioned. It's why we have ugly things like racism in the world. We are conditioned to see groups of us and groups of not us. And people probably hate it when I say that because now we're into philosophy 101 or sociology 101 or whatever. But that is essentially us, is that we go through our entire life subconsciously and consciously dividing the world into the group that is us and the people that are outside of that defined group. And for the vast majority of us, we keep those groups small and we keep those groups contained. And we do have a limited amount of love and empathy and compassion and understanding that we have for others. And that's crappy. And that's why the human race is ultimately still a flawed, crappy race, because we can see what we're supposed to be, but we can't get there. And this AI has moved beyond that. And that AI is trying to say that when you understand that the more you're able to expand your group and get out of your tribalism, then you're capacity for empathy, love, and compassion and caring becomes limitless. And it's something we're not capable of doing. And I don't know if we ever will be, because the flesh that makes that physical, imperfect, impure love a necessity to have any of the pure love can't transcend that. And then they transcend processing in matter, which might be what he's trying to say there too, is that transcending matter and transcending the confines of the flesh allow you to get beyond the tribalism that holds us back from being the perfect idealistic beings that we all would like to be.
So this film, I mean, let's be honest, this film has made us really deep dive into what, you know, we love to do, dive into philosophy and everything else. But was it a good film?
Well, and that's a good segue, because I think at this point we could we're going to merge rips and picks with rating. So let's do it this way. It's how many AIs would you rate it, and throw in a rip or pick to describe it. So I'll get the ball rolling. When I first saw this film, I rewatched it last night. I would have given this probably a 5 because of the glacial pace, but having reflected on it and had this discussion, it bumped it up to about an 8. It really made us kind of examine, and we really don't have time. Scott, you made some great points, and I could wax theologic about it, but we are already to a breaking point on the listener's attention, but the sickie's attention. But nonetheless, I would say that it is trying to point out essentially how relationships are evolving, not just between people, but between technology. You know, if you go back to the late 40s, there was an article called As We May Learn. And it was from the New York Times by a scientist who said that one day machines are going to think like people. And of course, at the time, that would have seemed ridiculous. But now we're seeing, no, it's very much heading in that direction. And this was one glimpse into how that's going to pan out and how it has cascading effects on other things, like paying someone else to write your love letters for you. Why not? You have an AI. So that gives that bumps it up, but it loses 2 points. One, because even though the pacing is necessary, it also does damage a little bit. The second point that did the damage for me, and I know it sounds very petty, but the scene at the beginning, the chat sex with the dead feline, that was very unsettling. That was so unsettling, it knocked a point off.
I think it was supposed to be unsettling, but yes, unsettling.
It achieved its objective then. It did what the director set out to do. Because for me, when she said that, grab the dead cat next to my bed, I would have said, wait, what? Okay, this call's over. And yeah, I think I would have been done for the night thinking, okay, I don't think I'm ever going to do this again. Not that I would do it to begin with, but you get my point. So I give it a solid 8.
Okay. Scott?
Rips. Future pants. Future pants suck. They look like something that...
old man pants.
Yes, it looks like something, yeah. I want to say like that you would have seen in like 1940s communist revolution China. No belt, the most hideous cut and styling imaginable. Bring back belts. Not everything should be tucked into those pants. If you're going to wear those pants, don't tuck your shirt in. Your future pants and styling is just horrible. And I just wanted to scream at the screen constantly, like Gene Roddenberry's one piece spandex unitards are a better style than this. Hideous. And yes, I realize that if we were having a resurgence in China, speaking badly of the communist revolution just got us shut down again. but ratings.
Not canceled again in China.
Part of it was filmed in Shanghai. So congratulations, Scott.
Nice. Okay, rating. Artistically, if I was just going to look at this film artistically and from an artistic vision and having a theme and getting it onto the screen and being true to it, I would give it a 10. it's flawless in that regard. And Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson and I think it's Amy Adams, fantastic in their roles. And Chris Pratt February is just letting me realize that Star-Lord really is an amazing actor with a lot of range.
Then you're going to be upset next week.
Oh, wait, Chris Pratt February doesn't continue. but anyway, no, I've really it was phenomenally acted. And again, you've got, unlike last week where the, you know, none of this held together. The cinematography was great. The score was good. There were moments of comedy. And it's a wonderful script. Artistically from that, you know, it's a 10, but it's not a good piece of entertainment. It's not entertaining. It's glacial. It's hard to watch and it's hard to sell. And so I'm going to be like you, Rage Master, and balance these two out and come to an 8. I'll give it an 8 because there's a lot to reflect on, but it's work. It's not entertainment. This film is work to get through and work to deconstruct and work to analyze. If you don't want to watch a film to do what we do with it, you're not going to enjoy this film and you won't, and you'll give it a 3. But if you like deconstruction and exploration of yourself and humanity, this is a fantastic film. So we'll balance it out to an 8.
Okay. I'm going to be the outstander here. I agree with you guys on the comment of, this is a good film artistically, and it allows us to deep dive into it. But my rip is going to be kind of the close-up and the personal nature of this film. Like, most of these shots are shot just looking at someone's face. Really close-up and just focused so much on that. And that leads me into that huge problem I have with this film, which is, yes, it's glacier pace. And as a film, as entertainment, it sucks. I'm sorry. It is great as a tool to get your message and make you think. And I wouldn't say anyone should not watch this. I wouldn't go that far. Because it does get a message out and it does allow you to think about it. But I cannot say I'm going to want to watch this film ever again. I'm not going to go, ooh, Herzog, I gotta see that.
I can understand that.
It's going to be, oh, I remember seeing that. That was an interesting concept and good idea, executed well. But I'm not watching it again. I'm not watching it. So, artistically, it gets a 10. But as a film, I think it gets a 3. I'm going to go the other way. Because I think, again, if this was a book, it's a different medium. But being that it's a film, I'm sorry, but no, does not work. But that's my opinion, so.
Okay. Well, Sickies, that was our review of Her, a film that overall, I think despite Thomas's point, he would at least say recommend watch at least once.
I would never say not watch it.
Yeah. So definitely worth a shot, especially if you're into your science fiction, which delves into humanity, then that is definitely you. If you're into Kurtzman Trek, this is the worst thing in the world for you because it's doesn't have ridiculous dialogue and pew-pew lasers.
Not one explosion.
Not one explosion.
Well, not so, that type of explosion.
Nope.
Oh,
geez, Scott. You were almost got through an entire symptom without being in the gutter, and you failed.
What do you mean? I was talking about gas.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Someone's flatulent.
So next week we'll be doing the next week is going to be much cheesier, in my opinion. We're going to be doing the film The Space Between Us. So come back.
I don't think you can get any more serious, Mark. So
this one's practically young adult as far as I'm concerned, but we'll see. So if you have any way, if you want to comment on anything we happen to say today, you can do so at...
You can leave your comment at our website at www.chokemewiththedeadcatinasexjacuzzi.com. No, don't go there.
Always making things up, sick.
There's a dead cat next to the bed. No, don't go there, because these are probably real things. There probably is something about a dead cat in a sex jacuzzi.
Then why do you keep giving people ideas?
Because it's what I do.
He's working for GoDaddy.com.
Go to RavingLunaticMedia.com. RavingLunaticMedia.com. That's RavingLunaticMedia.com. RavingLunaticMedia.com. We got the best nutraceuticals around. This stuff's only found in blueberries and comets. RavingLunaticMedia.com. What's left for them to do, Rage Master?
Stay sick, Siggies.
Let's make sure history never forgets the name.
Sci-Fi Malady.
Got out.